Hari Om Sahana. Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So 10, page 10. Okay. As we've seen above, out of the oft-quoted 20 items of knowledge listed by Srila Prabhupada from Bhagavad Gita 13:8-12, one is identified as direct, mukhya, and 19 as indirect, gona. Now, in his translation of Bhagavad Gita as it is 13:8-12, His Divine Grace links a gona item with a mukhya one. Nityam cha sama chitvam ishtan ishto papatishu mai chanya yogena bhaktir avya vicharini. To form an English phrase, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events and unalloyed devotion to me. Why did he do this? And why did he not simply concentrate on the single direct item of unalloyed devotion to Krishna and cut down the rest of the rather long purport on the 19 supportive items? The answer can be illustrated from a Srimad Bhagavatam lecture he gave in Paris on 15th June 1974. Nirvritta, Vidhi, Nishedha. Vidhi and Nishedha. These are two things. We say, you chant Hare Krishna mantra and prohibit, no illicit sex, negative and positive. So Vidhi means do's, Nishedha, do nots. So this is the beginning of life. Don't try to become Paramahamsa, Munaya, from the very beginning. Then you'll fall flat. That is not required. In the verses from chapter 13 under examination, reigning in the mind amidst pleasant and unpleasant events is the Nishedha, or restraining rule, and unalloyed devotion to me is the Vidhi, positive rule. Srila Prabhupada makes this clear in his purport. If one can mold his family life to develop Krishna consciousness, following these four principles, then there's no need to change from family life to renounced life. But if it is not congenial, not favorable for spiritual advancement, then family life should be abandoned. One must sacrifice everything to realize or serve Krishna, as Arjuna did. In all cases, one should be detached from the happiness and distress of family life, because this world, one can never be fully happy or fully miserable. If we are really in the spiritual position, these things will not agitate us. To reach that stage, we have to practice unbreakable devotional service. Devotional service to Krishna without deviation means engaging oneself in the 9 processes of devotional service: chanting, hearing, worshipping, offering respect, etc. As described in the last verse of the 9th chapter, this process is to be followed. In the above quotation, we have before us 3 verses. More precisely, we have the second half of 13:10. Nityam cha sama chitam ishtan isho papatishu. The first half of 3:13. Mai chanya yogena bhaktir avyapacharini. And the whole of 9:36. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyajimam namaskuru. Mam evaishasi yuktaiva atmanam matparayana. The first is a rule that, under favorable circumstances, connects a devotee's grihastha life to Krishna. But if circumstances are not favorable, the same role disconnects the devotee from grihastha ashram to protect his connection to Krishna. In either case, 1310b is a sambandha class verse. Its subject is keeping connection, sambandha, with the Lord in view of time, place, and circumstance. Bhagavad Gita 13a is an abhideya class verse. It teaches we have a duty to serve Krishna under any and all circumstances. According to Lord Chaitanya, abhideya, the process of exclusive worship of Lord Krishna, constitutes the centermost teaching of Shruti, Smriti, and the Puranas. The conclusion of the Lord is that the life force of a devotee should be fixed only upon abhideya. Sambandha and prayojana are sustained by constant devotional service. Okay, then quoting from Madhya Lila. When the mother Vedas, Shruti, is questioned as to whom to worship, she says, "You are the only Lord and worshipable object." Similarly, the corollaries of the Shruti Shastras, the Smriti Shastras, give the same instructions, just like sisters. The Puranas, which are like brothers, follow in the footsteps of their mother. O enemy of the demon Mura, the conclusion is that you are the only shelter. Now I have understood the truth. Chaitanya Charamita Madhya Lila 22.6. A human being's activity should be centered only on devotional service to Lord Krishna. That is the verdict of all Vedic literatures. And all saintly persons have firmly confirmed this. So he's bringing out this aspect, is we have this, always remember Krishna, never forget. So always the rules and regulations come in these pairs, that there's going to be something that you should be doing, there's something that you have to avoid to not do. Right? They go together. You can't just do one or the other. This is a problem. If someone's only talking about all the nice things to do, then that's nice, but we tend to call them sentimental. And if someone is always talking about all the things you should avoid, then we tend to call them critical, right? Or skeptical, or, you know, all these kind of things. So the idea is that we have to be able to balance these two. In other words, you have that inspiration, but in that, you're not foolish. You understand the field of activities in which you are to apply this. Right? Does that make sense? That's the whole idea. Like that. See, expertise at a camera is being able to take the shot quickly. There's a picture, an old picture. It was in the BTG. It was a main article. It was on the Gurukul, written by Vishakha Devi. So she came to the Gurukul, and she wanted to take a shot of the school that would represent the school, you know, the kids, the buildings, everything that was there. She looked around the school. Then she came back with the ideas that we'll have all the kids sitting in front of this one main building that was, you know, had grass roofs and stuff like that. And there was big lawn in front and the walkways and that. So in 10 minutes, then it was just put these kids here facing this way, that one there, this, that, and that, done it all like that. Then having done all that, then she went over and kind of like situated herself in some bushes. And what I thought now was going to be half an hour of clicking, you turn your head this way, no, look that way, this, that. In about 3 or 4 seconds, she clicked a few shots and then walked off. And then those pictures are in the BTG. That's the photographer. Right? Not that you stand there holding it for 5 minutes, you know, like that, because it's distracting. That's why these people get these amazing shots, because they can just go in, take the shot, and leave. But as soon as you sit there with the camera facing at you, staring at you, trying to get the thing, and like that, what kind of shot do you get? Right? It also is disturbing to the class. So one, you get a decrease in the quality of the class and an inferior picture anyway. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay, thank you. Okay, so here is bringing about that the connection to Krishna, how that connection to Krishna is important. That is what is very, very important. That you're going to, therefore, in always remembering Krishna, never forgetting, what's the important element? Is it just the remembrance and forgetfulness of Krishna? Right? So remembering Krishna, that's the important thing. Right? That's important because it's the relationship with Krishna that's important. Right? Then, in that, what does that mean that you're remembering and not forgetting? Where do we place that in sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana? Right? We're not placing it just in the Sambandha section. More important is the Abhideya you're going to do being in that position. Right? If we're servant of Krishna, then that would mean then that service that we render, that's more important. Otherwise, what's the meaning of being a servant if we don't serve? Right? Does that make sense? So he's bringing this point out, is that the Sambandha and the Prayojana are to be understood. But the Abhideya is actually where the focus is. Right? In other words, if there's a problem in you performing your activities, then you may focus on the Sambandha or on the Prayojana, whichever is weak. Does that make sense? Means I'm not able to perform the service because I'm distracted from it because I don't identify as a servant. Therefore, we have to think, no, I'm a servant of Krishna. I'm not the controller, I'm not the enjoyer and all that. So therefore, the emphasis then goes on to the Sambandha, but that's not, it's not Mother Jashoda sits around and goes, wow, I'm God's mother. I'm God's mother. Hey, everybody, I'm God's mother. She doesn't do that. You know, so the point is Sambandha is there so that you're rightly situated. Prayojana, it's the goal, but if you're always focusing on the goal, then when are you going to do the activity that gets you the goal? Right? So why do they say be goal-oriented and this and that? Because the people are lazy bums. They don't want to do anything. So therefore, you give them a goal, then there's some action. The point is it's not the goal, it's the action that's produced. And it's not just, no, you're born rich, you are this, you can do whatever you want, you know, you are this, you are that, you're great. It's not the Sambandha that's important. It's important is what activity you're going to do in that mentality. Does that make sense? So the action is the important part. So the Sambandha and the Prayojana, right, your identification and your goal, these are given so you can do the activity. Right? Why do you learn a field of knowledge? Just to know it or to use it? Right? What would you say? The guy went to, you know, 4 years of music school, and then after, you know, he's, you know, doing something else. You know, he's, you know, cleaning the streets or something. You'd say it's a waste of time. He has all this knowledge, but he doesn't use it. Does that make sense? So the idea is Abhideya is the central feature. Therefore, that pure, unalloyed devotion to Krishna is the central point. These others establish that you will be able to perform that. Because if you're undisturbed in the material world, then you can always be absorbed in devotion. Because otherwise, what's one of the first things that goes when you're disturbed by happiness or distress? Devotion. Right? You come into a very nice, material situation that's very pleasant, you like it very much. Right? Well, what are you thinking about? Krishna? Not necessarily. Right? And if something goes a little wrong, you think of Krishna. But if it goes a lot wrong, you also forget about Krishna. So, therefore, if you're going to be situated in this, always being absorbed in Krishna, you have to not be disturbed by the material situation. Right? Does that make sense? So, this is the whole idea. So now we're taking it to this next step, that we were studying, we understanding this thing of the Kshetra and Kshetrajna, or the field of activities and the knower of the field. So now you know the field of activities, you know who you are as the observer of this field. Now what are you going to do about it? Right? Then you're going to serve Krishna. So then it comes to the Abhideya platform. So all this is for action. Right? Therefore Prabhupada gives these, you know, that's, you know, what do you call it? Karma Yoga action in Krishna consciousness. Because that's what's important. Otherwise, you say karma yoga, then we think of it technically in terms of Sambandha. Right? Yes?
One devotee said that Jayananda Prabhu was philosophy in action.
Jayananda Prabhu was philosophy in action, yes. So that's, yeah. Yeah, and it worked. Right? He said it was pleasing to the spiritual master. Is this clear? Right. So okay. So because we're going through is that Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, but in this we also have to have the balance there. Because we don't want Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana to just be another aspect of the field. Right? It's knowledge. Because knowing sambandha abhideya and prayojana is sambandha jnana. Does that make sense? This is the fun part. Just because you know about abhideya doesn't mean you're doing it. Nectar devotion is describing abhideya. Right? So you study that and you know that. But the description of abhideya fits where? Is the description of abhideya abhideya? No, it's sambandha. It means who you are, who's Krishna, what's the relationship, what are the elements that you can use in that relationship. It's not abhideya. When you apply it, it's abhideya. Right? But it's describing it in terms of the application. So therefore, it's considered abhideya shastra. Right? Does that make sense? So until you apply it, it doesn't become abhideya. So that's the whole idea, is that because you have the knowledge doesn't mean you can perform the activity. This is a modern mistake. If you have knowledge, then you're educated. Right? But the fun part about it is, even though they say that at the university and get you inspired that if you have knowledge, then you are, special and all that. If you'll notice when they at the graduation ceremonies, what professors are sitting in the front and which ones are sitting at the back? In the front are your, your quantum physicists, your lawyers, and your doctors. Why? Why them? And who is in the back? All the arts professors. Professor of literature, professor of this, professor of that. Indology also, unfortunately, is sitting right at the back. Why? Because you can't do anything with that knowledge. And nobody even professes that you should. Does that make sense? You're an Indologist. What are you supposed to do with it? Become a practitioner of the Vedic culture? No way. But if you were learned medicine or you learned law and you didn't, people would say, what's going on? They expect you to be a doctor or a lawyer or a scientist out there, taking the atoms and making little pieces out of them. You're not doing that, there's something wrong with you. But the other, if you actually do it, there's something wrong with you. You understand? So even though they are claiming that all this is really good, in reality, it's not respected. This is just not respected. So the whole idea is, if there's no application, what is the use of knowledge? At the same time as, what's the use of application if you don't have knowledge? So they go together. So in other words, the sambandha jnana is applied, that becomes abhideya, the result gotten from that application is prayojana. So the bigger circle is sambandha. Abhideya, prayojana are circles within that. So now, having established that, you have kshetra, kshetra, gya, now what are they going to do? So to understand the kshetra and what it's for and everything, you need sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. But within sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, you have to understand the application of it in service to Krishna. That's the most important. Does that make sense? Like that. Because as we remember, prayojana always goes back to sambandha. Whatever result you gain, it always goes back and enhances the field. Right? It makes the field bigger. Does that make sense? Like that. Doesn't make sense. Kind of. Let's say your goal is to get a house. Right? Then once you have a house, then what is it? Is it still a goal? No, now it's your field of activity. Now you're known as a householder. Right? So it's your identity now. So everything, all your goals become your identity once you obtain them. Right? So the goal is static. The interest in a goal or the desire for a goal or your identity is static. So what's dynamic? The application, where you connect the identity or your desire with your need. That's what's dynamic. Having a desire, having a need, nothing happens. It's when you perform an action, then these two are connected. And so if you connect them, what does that mean? That this one has come to the other. Right? You could say, well, why doesn't it go that way? Why isn't it that Sambandha doesn't go and sit over in Prayojana? Right? That's because Sambandha is the masculine principle. That is the state of existence. Right? God is existence. He's masculine. So his energies are existing because of what? Because of him. So that means the Prayojana is dependent upon the Sambandha. Therefore, this Prayojana goes to Sambandha. Because that's its connection. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. The energy is dependent upon the energetic. Means,
but not the other way around.
No. How will it be?
Because in a relationship.
Yes, but you're talking relationship. We're talking tattva here. Oh. Right? It's like this. The fact is, the wife is dependent upon the husband. Her identity, everything is based on that. Her relationship, everything is there. That's the foundation. Right? But the point is how does that run? It runs in the opposite way. Right? So don't confuse the two. Right? It's the confusion of these two that make it where people are actually either philosophically incorrect or socially dysfunctional. Right? Right? When they should be talking rasa, right? You know, then the men are sitting around and talking, yes, the women, you know, they're supposed to be submissive, they're supposed to be this and that. That's tattva. But what is the form of that? What does it look like? Children are submissive to the parents. So do the parents sit around, blow whistles and attention and march and all this and that? No. Parents are running after the kids, even though it's the kids that are submissive to the parents. So this is where devotees go wrong. Everyone goes wrong. You know, but we couldn't care less about the karmis. Does that make sense? So this is the problem. And then when they should be talking tattva, then they're saying, oh no, but you know, they want to, you know, my little girl, she wants to bathe the deity, what's wrong? Okay, why so fanatic that she has to have initiation and had to do all those different other austerities? She wants to, it's a festival day, why you're so mean? Now we're using rasa where we should be discussing tattva. What's her adhikar? What's her position? Why would the deity want to be touched by her? You know, what has she done? Right? Why does the wife want to be close to the husband? He's done something. He does nothing. Why does she want to be close? So why does God want to be close to somebody who's done nothing? The only reason is because the mom's sentimental. So therefore, that's the qualification. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense or no? Yeah, so like that, we'll apply it, you know, and we can give so many absurd examples, and everyone will agree with it, but when it comes to the deities, then we throw it all out the window. So we have these tendencies. It's actually, it's interesting. We tend to throw all these things. We're good on everything running, as long as it's economics and mechanics and stuff. When it comes to five things, that's where we throw all the science out the window. Like that, it just struck me. Women, cows, Brahmins, you know, brahmacharis, and old people. We apply these very nicely to our car, to our blender, to our factory, to our business, to our everything. But when it comes to these, then it's just lost. Right? Isn't it? Right? You deal with your car on your car's terms. You drive it where you want, but how the car is willing to go. Right? You go around the hairpin bend, you do it at 10 miles an hour. You don't do it at 120. You do it at 120, what happens? You go into the bushes, and then afterwards you go, stupid car, you know, it doesn't know how to handle the corner. Everyone else would say, you're stupid. But then when he goes home, then it flips. Then he thinks, you know, whatever he wants, that's going to happen. But he can push it however how much he wants and completely mess the whole thing up. Does that make sense? Yes, this is the problem. as we apply these all very nicely, but when it actually comes down to real relationships with people, if it walks and talks, then we don't know how to apply the science. You know, if it doesn't, if it goes ka-ching or something, then we know how to use it. That makes sense? Okay. Now regarding the third verse under discussion, 934, mentioned on page 653 of the BBT edition of the Gita in connection with 311a, Mai Chananya Yogena Bhakti Avya Bicharani. Both Bhagavad Gita as it is and renunciation through wisdom leave no doubt that it is an Abhideya Prayojana verse. This is evident, first of all, from the Krishna plainly says to Arjuna in this conclusion to chapter 9. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee, offer obeisances to me and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. In the Bhagavad Gita as it is, purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada elaborates upon the power of devotional service, in other words, Abhideya, under the guidance of a pure devotee, to enable even a dog eater to, quote, attain the highest perfection of life, unquote, much greater than the jnanis and yogis. Prayojana. Okay. So here he's giving, it means, in other words, the power of devotional service and to obtain the goal of life. So then you get the Abhideya and the Prayojana. The same verse appears on page 116 of Renunciation Through Wisdom. Here Srila Prabhupada's comment is briefer than his Gita purport, but the message is the same. It is a sandhi, crossover from Abhideya to Prayojana. Quote, O people of the world, please try to translate the Gita's message into action and channel your thoughts towards Lord Krishna's lotus feet. Serve him with your mind and body. If you dovetail all your energy in the Lord's service, then not only will you feel intense exhilaration in this lifetime, but you will be immersed in eternal bliss in the spiritual world, perpetually serving him. So then we're clear on this, the Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, right? It's been discussed many times. So. Anything? No? Okay, so next is, what are the Vedas? What are the Vedas? Oh, okay. That's this next thing, the Vedas? Yeah? Okay. Next. Oh, so is that the end of that paper? Okay, so now on the Vedas. The Vedas are the original knowledge given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the beginning of creation. They were revealed by the Lord himself to Brahma from within his heart. Tene Brahma Hridaya Ya Adikavaye. Srimad Bhagavatam 111. Srila Prabhupada writes, the original source of knowledge is the Vedas. There are no branches of knowledge, either mundane or transcendental, which do not belong to the original text of the Vedas. They have simply been developed into different branches. They were originally rendered by great, respectable, and learned professors. In other words, the Vedic knowledge, broken into different branches by different disciplic successions, has been distributed all over the world. No one, therefore, can claim independent knowledge beyond the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.4.23 purport. Everything we know, material and spiritual, everything we want to learn or everything we have forgotten long ago has its origin in the Vedas. This is a very, very important point to be able to catch. Means in spirit. Is that, in other words, Vedas being knowledge, that means everything that actually is knowledge, that actually works, is Veda. It's just a matter of the presentation. Having come down in different lines, different paramparas, it may take on different flavors. So as it stays within the Vedic context, it will have the Vedic flavor to it. It will have that tradition, that culture. As it leaves the Vedic sphere, then that same knowledge coming down takes on different flavors, there's different attitudes. So it appears that it's different knowledge. So therefore, in the non-Vedic environments, they may even understand or, claim that it's their knowledge. But it's not. Point is, how can it be? If it works, why would it work? You're dealing with material nature, which belongs to who? right? And there are laws of nature that everybody accepts exist. Who wrote those laws? Right?
Krishna.
Krishna, not Einstein. You're sure? What about Hawkins? Gotta be Hawkins, right? You know, so what I'm saying is, it was written by God. So therefore, if you deal with the material energy according to its laws, it works. Right? It would be just like someone has a machine. This machine can do so many things. And somebody has a manual for that machine written by the manufacturer. And they study that manual and they use it. There's going to be one mood. Right? Because they'll pick up that mood from where? From the manual. Right? Now let us say you take that same machine and somebody, without having read the manual, comes upon this machine. Right? And they're inquisitive, they're intelligent, right? They're clever. So then they're going to, you know, push and poke at this machine until they get some response from it. Right? And once they get a response, you know, then depending upon their cleverness, they might find more responses they can get from this machine. Now, that knowledge they will claim they have found. Right? They have invented. Right? I push here and then it makes this noise. Right? I've invented this. Right? But the point was is the machine, you know, was already there and it has its method of running. And you can pinch and poke it however you like, but if you don't do it in the right way, it won't run. You go to a car, you can push anywhere, turn the wheel, kick the tires, you know, open and close the bonnet, do whatever you like, but it won't start unless you put the key inside. Right? Does that make sense? So if somebody by accident does that, then, oh, now they've, you know, invented, you know, the starting of the car. Does that make sense? So in other words, you cannot do anything with material nature that material nature doesn't allow. So in other words, what can be done with material nature is based on God's laws. So if we take this now into the topic we're discussing, that means then the anything that works in this world, it has been observed from the world, right? Newton sat under the tree, he got hit on the tree with an apple, right? Who created the ground he sat on? Newton? No. Who created the tree? Who created the apple? Who created the gravity that the apple dropped off the tree? It wasn't Newton, but who do we say invented gravity? Or understood or discovered gravity? Newton, right? Somehow or another, strange, the day before he understood this, you know, his mother could tell you that if you drop something, it will go to the floor. But now, Newton, he's the discoverer of this. You understand? So why does that work? Now, that works. Why? Because it actually is Veda. Because the Vedas discuss Anantadeva and the principle of gravity. So it's already there. That's why it works. But it now has a different flavor. It doesn't carry the Vedic flavor and tradition. Therefore, we call it, you know, modern knowledge. But in fact, if it works, it's not modern knowledge. It's Vedic. It just not be as, how you say, as comprehensive as the Vedic. Because the Vedic knows all the branches of knowledge and how they connect to each other. Well, the modern develops in its own area. Does that make sense? Right? And so then those things there, you know, can be done very nicely. Does that make sense? So with this understanding, then you can appreciate that therefore the principles are Vedic. And then based on those principles, great personalities have applied it. That's called tradition. So if you knock tradition, you're knocking the great personalities. Right? But you have to be able to take that tradition back to its root. What is the principle that it's there? Otherwise, it's sentiment. Right? Does that make sense? So when you have the knowledge, the principle that it's based on, and then you have a preferred application, then you have some consistency. Right? Otherwise, if you don't, you apply it however it works in the time, place, and circumstance. But the principle must be maintained. Just like that part before, in knowledge. You have so many qualities, 20 qualities, but that one has to be maintained. Then it carries the same flavor. If it's always connected to Krishna through unalloyed devotion, all the other 19 qualities carry the same flavor. But if we take one of them off on its own and center it around humility, or centering around to, you know, staying away from crowds, it'll take on a completely different flavor. Does that make sense? So that's what's happened in all these different world philosophies and world religions and all these different things, is that people are looking at it from a different perspective. They don't actually know what's the main central point. Does that make sense? So because of that, then it comes out with a different flavor. The word Veda comes from the Sanskrit root vid, which means to know. And thus Veda means knowledge. Veda denotes the science of God and the ultimate goal of life. The Vedic literatures describe the divine laws enacted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat panitam. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.3.19. These divine injunctions are the root of the original religion in the universe. Quote, the Vedas constitute the root of all dharma, manusmriti. The Vedas themselves proclaim, tasya vak tantir namani dhamani, tasya idam vacha tanya namabhir dhamabhi sarvam sitam. Quote, the threads of this transcendental sound form a string of sacred names, but also a set of binding ropes. With the rope of their injunctions, the Vedas tie up the entire world, leaving all beings fettered by false designations. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.27 purport. So this is also that very fine point. Why do we have to hair split? Right? Some will describe this variety of approaching the philosophy as hair splitting. Right, that you have to get down and know the exact difference between the sambandha and the prayojana on all different levels, or that, or this element of the Veda. You know, okay, there's the Vedas, yeah, great. Now what are we going to do about it? But the point is here is if you can't tell the difference, then right here, this transcendental sound of all these sacred names can free you from this world. It can also bind you. You're offensive to the holy names. What do you get? You go back to Godhead? No. So in the same way the Vedic literatures are followed properly, you get liberated from this world. You go back to Godhead. You don't follow them properly, you get bound here. Right? How many can you think of people who have gotten involved in Vedic things and this and that, and then some of them, it's really nice, it's a real addition to the environment. In other words, they just become that. Right? They take up Ayurveda, and they become an Ayurvedic doctor. And that's their identity. You never hardly see them again. That's their identity. That's what they do. What happened to doing it for Krishna? Right? Sorry. Astrology. So many like that disappear. Like Sanskrit. That's another great one for disappearing. Right? Same way, it's not that it's only that. Modern knowledge, they get into the self-help this, self-help that. You never see them again. You understand? So that's the whole idea, is that knowledge, then if it's connected to Krishna by this central point of everything should be done for Krishna, that's knowledge. Then you don't get bound, you get freed by it. It's what frees you from material contamination. Right? But if you don't follow it with that as the central feature, then you will be bound because it will give you a material identity. It means the sambandha isn't, I'm servant of Krishna, therefore this is to be used in Krishna's service. Then this becomes the sambandha, the field of activities is your identity. Then you become the doctor, the lawyer, the manager, the business person. You become that. Right? Then you get bound. But if you understand I'm the observer of this field, then all those same things become engaged in Krishna's service. Very simple. Yes?
You've got to have a primary designation before you have a secondary designation.
Yes. In other words, the primary designation, I'm servant of Krishna. I may serve through performing these activities. Therefore, let's say I'm serving as a grihastha, so therefore all the activities of grihastha life have to be in connection with me being as a servant of Krishna. So Prabhupada was saying, if it's favorable, then you stay with it. What does it matter? It doesn't matter, you know, grihe tako, vane tako. It doesn't matter where you are. But if it's unfavorable, why you should be involved in it. Right? So in other words, if you can see Krishna in it, in other words, you know this knowledge is coming from Krishna, all these things, what's the purpose of it? You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it's like that. Okay, you have medicine. So therefore, what's the central feature of that, right? Is health. So, but what's the purpose of being healthy? To engage in Krishna's service. That's the whole point. So then with that in mind, then you approach the science. Then you can use everything. You have a question. No, this is from before when we were talking about the kshetra and kshetra-gya. The field of activities, kshetra means everything that you see and can experience, right? Kshetra-gya means that the one who is observing this, which is the soul. So if you think you're the body, then you actually are identifying as kshetra, as the field of activities. So that way then you become entangled, because the field is dead matter, so you become as good as dead matter. But if you're kshetra-gya, means you see the field, you know, and you know you're different from the field. Therefore, as different from this field will be engaged in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? Not necessarily, because you may be just using your intelligence, how you're clever, you're smart, and just seeing better the field. The observer doesn't mean that you're observing the field. The observer means the position from which you're observing it.
If I'm trying to...
It's just like you're dealing with your child, and you're interacting as a mother, but you're identifying as the mother, and therefore all the experiences are gained from the mother. That means you're a part of the field. Because the mother is interacting with this child. That's the field of activities.
But if it's a retrospective review, then...
But it still may be. It could be you thinking of, well, when the child came, I could have done this, and then they would have been happier, could have done that. It's still field. You understand? Observer is used as a term so that... to become aware of the concept. It's not necessarily the literal term. Just like Krishna, he is kshetra-gya. He is a bird sitting on the tree watching. He's not taking part in the activities of the other bird who's eating the fruits of the tree. So that bird that's eating the fruits identifies with the tree and its fruits. It doesn't understand that it's actually separate. So in other words, if the mom is dealing with the child, why is she dealing with the child? What's the inspiration? Why would she be doing it? Right? Because what has the soul got to do with the body and got to do with your body or the other body? So it's our identification with it that we're inspired to be involved. Because you identify as a mother, you have the needs of a mother, therefore you're interacting with your child. Because you do that with your child, you may or may not do that with someone else's child. There's no interest. Right? Two doors down, there's other children, but you have no interest to interact with them and pat them on the head and feed them and clothe them and bathe them. So, therefore, it's your attachment to what's yours. That's your inspiration. If we remain like that, we remain bound. You know, now you're the mother, next time you're the father, next time you're the child, next time you're the dog in the house, or whatever, it just keeps going on. Right? So, but when we identify as the servant of Krishna, means we're the soul, then now we dealing with, okay, as a soul, then I should be serving Krishna. But due to my conditioned nature, then I am distracted by material desire. Being distracted by this material desire, then, because that is a place of consciousness, I'm supposed to be Krishna conscious, so where I am conscious, therefore I am Krishna conscious. That's the place. I don't need to be Krishna conscious in areas I'm not conscious of. Right? Does that make sense? The particular torque on the drill bit in the oil rig that they're drilling now off the coast of North Alaska, do you have to engage that in Krishna's service? Why not? It's part of Krishna's energy. Why aren't you engaging it? Right? But you're not there. It's not something you think about, right? When you're making breakfast for your family in the morning, do you think, you know, now and again, you know, reflect back on, you know, that oil rig? You understand? No. Because it's not within the realm of your consciousness. It's not something that you're observing, can observe. So therefore, those areas of your observance, that's where you need to be engaging the Lord's servants. So, because you think you're observing the concept of the interaction between parent and child, that's what you have to engage in Krishna's service. Now, if you're servant of Krishna, and it's Krishna's material energy, so it's Krishna's concept of mother, Krishna's concept of child, right? Therefore, you have to follow God's rules if it's going to work. Because a lot of people are mothers and fathers and children, but the relationship doesn't work. Why? Because they're not following God's rules. It's that simple. It's not just sentiment, I want. That's not enough. I want, you know, to be a billionaire. Did it happen? You know, when you walk back to your guest room, you won't be able to get the door open because it's so full of money that you can't, is that what's going to happen? You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't happen like that. You have to follow God's laws, then it works, then you get the result. Does that make sense? So now you can do that, be the mother for yourself or be the mother for Krishna. Right? You're following God's laws, but you're doing it for yourself. But the result is that you're following Shastra, so it's connected to Krishna. So that's the lower stage. The higher stage is, I'm in the position in this family, and I'm in the position of mother, right? Not, you know, you don't have to be voted in or have, wear a label on your head, but, you know, that's the position you're in, right? So now I should perform the duties of that. But now you're performing those duties not for yourself, not for the kid, but for Krishna. And doing for Krishna means you have to do it, you know, what pleases the kid according to what's appropriate that a mother does for the kid. And who sets that laws? Krishna. So now that is Krishna conscious, you know, parenting with child. Right? So it's just a change in consciousness. It means you have to have some knowledge and a change in consciousness. And then it works. Does that make sense? Right? So it's a simple science, but devotees don't take it this far. As soon as you get into this, it's all sentiment. It's all scratching and biting and you know, ripping and tearing, and that's it. You can't get into this area in Grihastha's lives. They refuse. They shut the door. They lock it. They put up bars. You know, and, you know, unless you are one, you don't understand. You know, that's like, you know, saying the guy on the bank doesn't understand that somebody's in the water drowning. You know, hey, if you grab that rope and hold on to it, you know, we could pull you out. No, unless you're in the water, you can't understand what's going on here. Kind of stupid. But it's a very popular stupidity. Extremely popular. Oh, well. So we'll end here for today. We'll continue tomorrow. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. You a Dapper Dan man? Are you a Dapper Dan man? Or you use that fop pomade? Okay. Thank you.
One thing I wanted to just mention is that pushing the water. I can't understand unless you're in the water. What if someone were to pick that and listening to an earlier class, where you mentioned the academic studying Tibetan Buddhism and the Dalai Lama, who's the more...
Yeah, but that's the academic. The point is... Yeah, no, that's a good point. See, the thing is it's not just academic. It's a matter of understanding the whole culture and how it works. You know what I'm saying? But you can learn by three things: hearing, seeing, or experiencing. So basically what Grihastha is saying is unless you've experienced it, you can't understand it. But you can also learn about it and understand it. Does that make sense?
So how